professor of health, law, and ethics at Susan J. O'Connor College of Law at Arizona State University, where he also directs the public health law and policy program. He has much more exciting bio than the one he offered me, but yes, you do.
That's it.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thanks for...
Thank you, Jennifer, and thank you, Doug and Keisha, and thanks to everybody here today for the purposes of our discussion. Now, listen, I'm going to get right into it fast and furious, but I want you to know there is a very authoritative, well, actually, it's just a reasonably good report, we think, that's been produced. It's available online. I have one copy here. I'm going to leave it at the desk. If you're the first one up there when we finish, it's yours. But if you want a copy printed, let us know at the Pew Charitable Trust or just send me an email, and I'll send you one directly. I'm going to take what's in this report that we spent basically 18 months engaged in significant legal research to address, and I'm going to boil it down to hopefully some core observations that help us think through this issue of when and how does law in the United States support, facilitate, or potentially prohibit the use of health impact assessments as we speak. Now, Doug did a great job of illustrating legislatively where might state legislators be going with this as a concept, and Keisha did an excellent job explaining, you know, where are we using these HIAs? My role here is a little different. I'm just going to flat out tell you, what does the legal environment look like in relation to these? Does it support the use of HIAs, or does it not? So I think you'll find these various different findings refreshing. To say the least, no financial relationships, commercial interests related to the proposal, and just wanted to let you know that to be sure. What I do want to acknowledge is the Pew Charitable Trust, the Robert Wood Johnson's Foundation, to be sure, for their support for this project that we engaged at our Public Health Law and Policy Program at the Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law. And to that end, talking with our Pew and RWJ colleagues with the Health Impact Project, we devised a single research question, easily and simply stated: how do laws at all levels of government authorize, require, facilitate, or potentially inhibit the performance of the use of HIAs by public or private actors to guide decisions in non-health sectors? It's a simply stated question. It's horrifically difficult from a legal review and research perspective to answer it, because we then took a look at all of the various different legislative, regulatory, and case-based decisions in a host of jurisdictions to try to get to that answer. You saw Keisha with her pie chart show you all the different places where HIAs are being used in non-health sectors. We had to hone in our research to four, and they are listed there: environment and energy, transportation-related issues, agriculture, waste disposal, and recycling. So to that end, what we did is we first started with key terms, adopting precisely the definition of a health impact assessment from the National Research Council, and so you see that definition there. But the other thing we realized is if we were solely to hone in on state support for that specific type of mechanism, we're going to be missing something critical, something where a state or a city or federal government authorizes something like a health impact assessment, even if they don't specify it. So we then looked at what we kind of defined as a health assessment. Could be a health risk assessment, a health effects study, a ERA, whatever it was. If an HIA could be logically incorporated within it or help support that assessment, we counted it in regards to our legal review. We're trying to show you support for the broadest spectrum of potential assessments of which HIAs may be included. So to this end, we came forward to this project with a couple core premises. First of all, existing laws do create opportunities to factor health and public health into a range of decision-making in non-health sectors. That was our premise going in. HIAs provide a systematic way to further the purpose and spirit of these laws, to be sure. And even most importantly, public health officials and advocates, they can fully engage other sectors in efforts to improve the public's health. Part of the sort of momentum, as Keisha talked about, in a health and all policies environment, we see this as pivotal on the legal front as well, and that theme tended to play out. How did we go about this study? Without going into great detail that is laid out nicely in the report, basically we selected a host of jurisdictions, 36 in total, the federal government, 20 states, 10 localities, and 5 tribal governments in the United States, to just give us a flavor of, all right, if we look at these jurisdictions to the limits of what we can with our comprehensive legal research, will this give us a sense of how law may play out in regards to facilitating, requiring, or perhaps prohibiting HIAs? And so what we see in some of our general results is as follows. This particular bar chart is simply laying out for you among these 36 jurisdictions, those in the green that show where HIAs are legally required or facilitated. In other words, we found sufficient legal support in statutory, regulatory, or case-based law that would facilitate or actually require a HIA in, for example, environment and energy in 22 of these jurisdictions. And in the yellow, we're showing health assessments may be legally viable based on our classification, not required, not necessarily facilitated, but viable. In other words, nothing to legally stop them from going forward in 26 jurisdictions in environment and energy. And then in a couple cases, too, particularly in this field of environment and energy, we did see specific laws that said you will not go forward with an HIA or something like it in a given particular arena. And so you see those results laid out across the four major sectors that we looked at: environment and energy, transportation, agricultural laws and policies, waste disposal, and recycling. Now I've got a little quiz for you. I'm going to break these down here for you in just a moment. You're going to see four different slides showing you the jurisdictions and the way they broke down. The quiz is, I want you to identify the two jurisdictions across all four of these sectors that actually either require or facilitate HIAs based on these results. So let's see if you can get those. I'd be curious. I'll give you a little hint. They're both states. Now, first, environment and energy. Here are the specific 22 jurisdictions that legally require or facilitate HIAs from the perspective within the environment and energy capacity, broadly speaking. And to be sure, this includes, as you can see, a number of states, a couple of tribal governments, and a city, particularly here, Seattle. Now, just to give you a couple of examples, the report lays out multitude of examples and shows you exactly where we got some of this information, but I like these two specifically. In California, the State Energy Resources Conservation Development Commission must conduct assessments on all aspects of energy supply and production and distribution and what have you. It specifically states in California code these assessments must account for impacts on public health and safety. That's language you're looking for. That facilitates an HIA in a great way. Oregon's got another provision about applicants for permits to interstate lands to drill for oil or gas. They've got to go and show that adverse impacts may include scenic, recreational, or public health impacts, nicely stated in their administrative regulations. You see that? You're seeing legal support for the conducting of an HIA. It's not requiring it per se, but it's supporting it and facilitating to a great degree. Now, transportation. Here are those six jurisdictions that legally require or facilitate HIAs within the arena of transportation policy, highway development, or what have you. The example I can give you here is nicely found in Washington State. A brilliant example of how Washington explicitly requires an HIA for its State Route 520 bridge replacement project up in the Seattle area. It's one of the few examples where we found in law that the legislature had explicitly stated you will conduct an HIA before this project goes forward. That's exactly what they've done, and they came out with some really interesting and important findings that actually did change the demeanor of how the project has gone forward. How about in agriculture? These results again show six states plus the federal government in all across what we saw that actually require or facilitate HIAs in an agricultural policy or development perspective. The example I like comes from the federal government. So if you weren't aware, under the federal law, the USDA has to assess the risk to human health or human safety or the environment and prepare cost-benefit analysis for literally every proposed regulation with a national fiscal impact greater than $100 million, and that's in 1994 figures. This analysis, explicitly stated in federal code, must include evaluations of the health and safety risk to persons who are disproportionately exposed or particularly sensitive. You could see how an HIA fits into that. Essentially, how you can only get to the source of some of that analysis, but through a sophisticated work through an HIA. How about our final category? And I do hope you've kept my quiz in mind. I'll be looking for answers in a second. Waste disposal and recycling. Here are those, again, six states, no, with apologies, 11 states, or 11 jurisdictions, that is, several states, New York City, in which various different HIAs may be legally required or facilitated. The example here comes out of Texas. Solid waste permit applications in Texas, pursuant to Texas code, statutory provisions, have to include feasibility studies that evaluate alternatives in terms of the public health, physical, social, economic, fiscal, environmental. You see the implications. Mentioning public health directly facilitates the use of an HIE to get to the source of providing that type of study. What sort of key themes did we generate from this type of research? Nicely laid out in the report, and I'll be very brief in reciting. First of all, the law is referring to assessments of a range of health impacts, and the use of study results to inform policy or program decisions are all determined, at least pursuant to our legal review and interpretation, as facilitating to a great degree the use of HIAs. If you think coming into this specific effort that the law stands in your way, or it's a barrier, an obstacle, won't allow you to do an HIA, we found very few examples of that. In fact, we found a lot more that suggests the law actually can be your partner. NEPA is a good example. Corresponding state laws related to the National Environmental Protection Act often allow the incorporation of HIAs into mandated environmental impact statements. EISs are a very different tool. But these state laws often see HIAs as what could be part of that tool. Laws requiring health or additional research assessments based on health returns may support the use of HIAs depending on the breadth of these laws, as well as governmental actors' willingness to enhance their scope. This is so critical, and I think Doug did a nice job of illustrating this with the legislators' intent here. If there's great support at the policymakers' level, yes, these provisions, these HIAs can go forward, but in many cases it won't be the law that's a barrier. Federal or state preemption in specific sectors, however, particularly nuclear policy, could stop HIAs in some jurisdictions. There's a good example in the report about a tribal government that sought to engage an HIA for the purpose of assessing the impact of a nuclear plant within the tribe or outside of the tribal government, and that was shut down by a federal court, basically saying, no, this is preempted by the feds. The Atomic Energy Act, and to say the least, was not allowed to go forward. Health assessments may be admitted increasingly as evidence by courts pursuant to litigation. These can be used offensively, for example, to challenge a proposed project or action or allocate responsibility for environmental cleanup. But they're also being used defensively as well to overcome a challenge to a proposed project or action by showing that there's certain negative health effects will not occur or to demonstrate compliance with health and safety requirements. We saw several cases in which HIAs were being used in these capacities, and it became very interesting to see to what extent do judges actually support their use for these evidentiary related bases. Absent explicit legal authority to conduct HIAs, localities may, and frankly, often do, use them to inform their decisions. The best example we could give of that is within what Keisha identified as a big arena, the zoning issues, built environment. There's not much we saw there that explicitly requires HIAs, but gosh, are they being used increasingly to illustrate the sort of opportunities within that arena. So with that said, my colleagues as well, special thanks. Did you get my quiz right? What were the two states? Love to hear.
California.
What was the first?
California.
Nice, Jennifer. What was the second?
Washington.
No.
Illinois.
Brilliant. California, Illinois, the two states that really did have specific provisions across all those barriers, both those sectors. Thank you all. What did you think of that?